Hi, I'm Reverend Carol Saunders, host of the Spiritual Forum. I'm here with a lot of interesting people who are consciously walking the spiritual path, experiencing and expressing the divine in unique ways and through unique lenses. Everyone here has wisdom to share and an interesting story to tell, all to inspire you on your spiritual path. Welcome to the Forum. Welcome, everyone, to the Spiritual Forum. I'm so glad you're here. I'm recording from Wisconsin, and my guest is in Michigan, and I will introduce him in just a moment, but I want to just give a brief shout out to Debbie for donating to the Spiritual Forum podcast prayer and retreat ministry. I always appreciate everybody who supports this ministry, and at this point, it's 100% donation-based ministry, so thank you for showing up and doing all of the good things that you do to support this podcast. We're on the spiritual path together. And this podcast is the message of hope, inspiration, and awakening. And all of my guests have an interesting story to tell that inspired us on our transformative journey from who we've been to who we are becoming. So let me introduce to you Seth Copald. He's a certified level 3 internal family systems practitioner. He's got a PhD in organizational management, and he facilitates his own retreats and workshops, but he's also been on Dick Schwartz's staff for multiple retreats. Dick Schwartz is the founder of Internal Family Systems. I'm going to let him tell more about his own journey. His specialties include self-led parenting, leadership, spirituality, and creating spaces where people's parts feel safe and understood. We're going to learn about our parts in just a minute. We're going to be focusing our conversation today on his newly published book, which is Self-Led, Living a Connected Life with Yourself and with Others. Welcome, Seth.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you too. I've got lots of interest in internal family systems theory and how we can apply that to our lives. We'll talk about the spiritual angle of this in a minute, but I'd love to hear from you. If you can share briefly what your spiritual journey has been that has taken you to being a level 3 internal family systems practitioner and also a new author of Self-Led.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I really love this question, and you sent it to me ahead of time. And it's been almost like illuminating for me to like look at it almost like a timeline and like how things I did early in life have led to now. So I was raised in a Jewish home, and I ended up going to a Jewish summer camp when I was young. And I feel like our family, we weren't very religious at home, but my parents grew up during the Depression in New York City, like Orthodox, old world kind of family. But anywhere I went to a synagogue or anything like that, I never felt comfortable. I never felt at ease. And then when I went to camp, we kind of had a lived experience of what it means to be Jewish. And one thing that taught me the most, like a story that came out, there's a word called kavanah, which means like when you pray or when you connect with something larger than you, it's really from your heart. And it's like this full presence. And it's very different than just going through the motions. And when I heard that story and that explanation, something kind of awoken me. And they're quiet, like kind of murmuring. And this little boy walks in to the congregation and starts singing the Hebrew alphabet at the top of his lungs, like maybe a 5-year-old who doesn't really know that this could, you know, be disruptive. And all the men were looking back and frowning and things like that. But then the rabbi stopped and told everyone that, and from his vision, that this boy was praying like more so than anyone else in the room. Like, cause he was, all he knew was the alphabet, but he was singing it from his heart to as a form of connection. And that story is stuck with me. And I see how now like this idea of kavanah, of being with your heart, has flowed into, like when I was a teenager, I kind of found metaphysics, which would be like, you know, interested in like how stones and crystals could be used for healing, or just how like connecting with things larger than us. And during my 20s, I was very into studying and reading books about other cultural traditions, from oftentimes written by someone who like, I'm going to go and learn about this spiritual tradition, and you learn along with the author. So I spent a lot of time studying like world religions. And shortly after that, I found myself through education, I became a Montessori teacher, and I was trained in Montessori, the international version. And Dr. Montessori, who was the first woman in Italy's history to become a physician, was extremely spiritual. It's almost like very much like Kavanaugh, where she felt like if you really observe children, they'll teach you what they need. In a very spiritual way, like if you really let go of all your preconceptions and are very present and like almost like sensing them, like that's the highest form of observation, and they teach you what they need. You create conditions for them to be successful based on what you observe. So I gained a deep respect for children, a deep respect for their process during that time. And, you know, after that, been included in various traditions and various, like I've been invited to Native American ceremonies. And I kind of wove, like kind of circled back to Judaism since my kids were born, because I wanted them to have an identity, a Jewish identity. And I still felt like nothing fits. Like I couldn't find my place. Like I felt like, you know, like the whole kind of wandering Jew kind of thing. And I finally found a place in this, in Reconstructionist. Which is a place where people can kind of create their own sense of things. And then within that, I found IFS. And IFS is Internal Family Systems, created by Richard Schwartz. And there's this notion that we all have this self inside, that like this pure, authentic self that can't be damaged. And that we have parts of us who become damaged. And when we can kind of ask our parts to give us enough space, it's almost like the clouds are covering the sun. The sun is self, our authentic self. You might say our authentic soul, and our parts cloud it where we can't be ourself. And when we get permission and our parts separate, we're in our already in our full strength. And then we could be there for ourselves, for our parts that way. We can be that way for other people. And I feel like, wow, it's really going back to Kavanaugh, like, because I feel like self-energy resides in the heart, where my brain can create all kinds of problems, but when I'm in my heart and I'm in my full self, I'm curious about you and I'm curious about me, and I think my head is more protective of me. And then within IFS, there's all kinds of actual spaces. There's like a mystical side of IFS where we're connecting to other energies and what's been passed into us, you know, like almost like epigenetics, but also other energies from our parents. Like, do I hold my dad's anger types of things, even connecting with what's bigger than us. And we also believe that our self is connected to a larger self. Yeah. I'll just say IFS has become like a mode of me, how I look at the world. And I still love all these other traditions out there, but I'm always like wondering who's doing this, who's engaging in the spiritual practice. Is it me or is it one of my parts?
Interesting. Yeah. I want to get into IFS and really quickly, because I don't know how familiar everybody is out there about IFS, but first let me just reflect on some of what you were saying, because what is it? It's Kavanaugh. Is that what you were talking about? Mm-hmm. Is that how you pronounce it? Kavanaugh? Mm-hmm. I love the story of the little boy singing the alphabet. That's an authentic expression of the divine self or the actualized self. Mm-hmm. And like the child who's singing the alphabet as, you know, at the top of his lungs, that he is the one who is praying more authentically than the rest of us that are reciting all this stuff or trying to do everything right or say the right things or whatever. I just love that story. And that's like, you know, returning back to our, I don't know if it's returning back to our innocence, but it is. I think the whole thing about IFS is, well, I'll let you talk about it, but allowing the self to emerge and to really be in control, which is the title of your book, Self-Led. But before we get into too much, let's just talk a little bit about internal family systems and what these parts are, and and what I think you've alluded to what the self is. I like the idea that the parts are like clouds Because I think a lot of people look at the authentic self and the ego, and the ego is this thing we need to get rid of or put somewhere away. But right. You talk about it so much more gently, that it's more about connecting with these parts, learning who they are, and asking them to give you space. So can you share a little bit about what these parts are? What are some typical parts? And what is the best way that we would engage with them?
Okay. Great question. So in IFS, it leans on other philosophies and other theories of the mind that we have something called multiplicity, which means we can hold many perspectives at once. And I might even say, even to ask the listeners, like, think of your most guilty pleasure dessert that you love. And if somebody says, would you like that chocolate cake? Or would you like that carrot cake or cheesecake? How many conflicting feelings we might have in that moment, right? One part's like, yes, it's almost like an animalistic, I'm going to eat that cake. And then there's another part that might sound like a parent, like, you know what happens if you eat that cake, you're going to feel crappy. And then you might have another part who will shame us for eating the cake. And all that can be happening at once. And I've heard these theories where it's like, push that away, push that away, push that away. But in IFS, what we've learned is, because we can actually interview these parts. So when I'm working with someone, I'm helping them talk to the part who says, aren't you a horrible person if you want to eat that cake? And what we hear is that all of these parts have good intentions. Like, they're trying to save us from some deeper pain. And these are the protectors I'm talking about right now. So we have two general types of protectors. One is called, we call it a firefighter, because it's trying to soothe pain instantly. It's like a reaction. So the parts who react. So for instance, if you told me, like, after the show, Seth, this was horrible, there's no way we're going to even post this, I might have a part who says, I'm about to eat some chocolate cake. I'm going to just, like, get rid of all that pain through this cake. And then right. We have, and those are the same parts that actually, when they're really extreme, they make people drink and do drugs and gamble. But they're also they're not so extreme, where they might make me zone out. They might make me feel flatline, like I feel numb. They might make us look at our phones and zone out. And then we have these other parts that are protectors that we call managers, who are like actively, proactively trying to keep us looking okay, so that we don't feel the pain inside as well. And the pain might be beliefs about ourselves, like, I'm not as smart as I think I should be, I'm worthless, I'm not enough, I'm too much, all those other deeper things that we hold, shame. And the manager saying, Seth, if you're perfect, if you come across this way, no one's going to ever invoke that in us. No one's going to see that in us. You know, so I'm going to eat well, and I'm going to look good, and I'm going to do all these things. And then behind the protector, it's like a protector's wall almost, more hidden, not so much subconscious, because we can get in touch with these parts, but they're often out of our consciousness, is what we call exiles, parts that we have pushed away that carry these beliefs about ourselves. And even especially American culture, it's like, you're not even supposed to entertain these beliefs. You're supposed to pull on your bootstraps and move forward, right? Like, we're not supposed to entertain this. Nowadays, I think more people, it's more normalized to have therapy and do self-exploration. But for many years, it wasn't. And these exiles tend to be really young. So when we find them and go to them, people will often see images of themselves, a lot of times stuck in a time period in our lives. Ann Cinco is one of the trainers. She recently talked about almost like a wrinkle in time. Like, you have your timeline, something bad happens to you, like a small t, large t trauma, somebody at school, your parents to say or do something to hurt you. It's almost like there's a little bit of a wrinkle, and this part gets kind of stuck there with this experience. So we help people go back and retrieve those children and etc. And then when our parts become unburdened, it's like, you know, like, self is kind of like, almost like you said, a divine state of being, but we can't function if we're only that. We would almost be in a meditative, blissful state. So in order for me to interact with you, my parts are helping me all the time. So parts are not bad. When they're burdened, they could be extreme. And what we say is, our parts can blend with us. So when the clouds are covering the sun, you think there's like a cloudy day. and people experience you like a cloudy day. But when I criticize you or defend, I might be really a defensive type of person, or my ego, I'm the best person in the planet. It just means that part is stepping in front of you and you're talking through its mouth. It's using your mouth, actually. And as I ask that part to step aside and give me more space, I can listen and say, oh, you want me to look good. How can I help with that? So you want me to be prepared. You want me to do my stuff. Okay, is it okay if I take the lead? And then a lot of times, this is like something I made up. Go back to your parts and ask, how did I do? Like, oh, it looks like she's smiling right now. Am I doing okay? Okay, good. Right? But if that part was in the lead, you might not be smiling because you might sense an agenda. And that's when you say, like, this guy's got a lot of ego. And ego is a bunch of managers. It's not like some evil force. It's like a team of managers trying to make me look acceptable and lovable. When people say lock away your ego, ship it away, it's almost like you're exiling more of yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, I can see that. I love the way you describe this. And I think it's just so fascinating. I think you also talk in your book that when we get embroiled in conflicts, either at work or with our kids or with our partners, that what's happening is our parts are out there in the in the broiling, and our cells are kind of back here. And so you can see it when other people are doing it. I was watching a show last night. I'm like, oh, I see that part. I see that part. I think it's easier to see it in other people. But that's what we're doing. It's like our little ferocious dragons are engaging with each other.
It's parts against parts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting. Yes. And then you also tell people in your book that if somebody is obviously reacting to you with a part, then you've probably brought forth your own part. So all of this to me really requires a lot of commitment to observation of the self and a desire to really, really be on what I call the spiritual path, which is really discovering and allowing that the true self, who we were born to be, and it's not it's not like finding it so much, but allowing it to be able to be in what's a better word? Led is your word. I was going to say in control, but leading, being the leader.
Right. My PhD in leadership taught me that you can't be a leader unless people choose to follow. Like, I can manage people and threaten them. I'm not going to pay you unless you do your work. But leadership is I choose to walk forward and people behind me say, I like that idea. I'm going to go with you. And so with our parts, it's like you become a trusted figure in the system. They say Seth nurtures us. He listens to us. He understands us. When he makes choices, they tend to be good. So we're going to trust to let him lead. And oftentimes our parts don't even realize how old we are. So one question we ask people is like, ask the part how old it thinks you are. A lot of times much younger. So of course they would need a lead if they thought you were 5 or 7 or 12 or 20. So some of this is gaining trust in the system. And I will say one more thing, if you don't mind that.
Oh, sure.
This whole thing about like, as a mirror, like if I'm blended with a part, you'll sense an agenda and you'll react. So for me, I'm always like, I think it's the Montessori in me too, always wanting to observe, like you said. And if I see you reacting to me negatively in the past, my parts would feel very defensive, like, ooh, what are you doing to me? Right? Like, you're being mean. But now it's like, I even have my managers go, Seth, IFS, be curious, like, see what's happening. So if I see you getting upset, I know parts beget parts. So let me do a quick, what we call a U-turn back to myself and say, was I blended with something just a minute ago? Like, what was my intention? What was my agenda? Why is this person responding this way? Let me see. It's easier for me to shift than to ask you to shift.
Yeah.
And then if I could make space, your protectors were watching me before. Now they could relax and then your protectors relax. And now it's more of a self-to-self interaction.
Okay, great. Now, I've got a question before we go into the self, because I understand the protectors for sure. That's a very, very familiar, and even the firefighters and the exiles as well, too. But do the exiles, they're that wrinkle in time where something happened And I think in like soul retrieval, there's also this, you know, going and retrieving these souls, soul parts right. that have broken off. So there's different ways of really using this metaphor. But let's just say I had some sort of experience at the age of 7 or 5 or nine or whatever. And it is a part that is really kind of in front a lot. Now, I learn about it. I engage with it. Does that part ever grow up and it's not 7 or 9 anymore? Or is it always with me as a 7 or 9-year-old?
I would say it varies on the person. One thing is, you know, you mentioned hope. Like, we call ourselves hope merchants, which I love that you're interested in hope. The hope is that first we can get them out of there so I don't have to keep reliving this experience.
Yes.
Right? Because if you got mad at me right now, the reaction I might have is not just you being mad at me, but my father yelling at me when I was 12. So I'm like, that part is getting activated and it's like I'm getting both. And that's why then I have to overreact to you. So when I go back and heal that part, there is like an unburdening where we can say, take those beliefs out of your body, give it to the elements. I don't really talk about that a lot in our book because this is kind of an intro, but there is a release of these beliefs. And then I bring the part to the present and it's with me. My parts stay those ages. I have an infant, like very much a newborn that I just worked with recently that I hold right here. And just by doing this, my whole body relaxes. I have another little older infant that I carry in a sling that's always here. I have a 3-year-old that tends to be to my right that when people are upset with me, he gets really upset and I have to call him over and have him sit on my lap. And then because I'm feeling his body, like when he's upset, I'm upset. Because our parts are still us, right? So when I'm not feeling self, I know the part is blending with me. So as I soothe him, then I'm soothed because his body's soothed. And then I'm here with you. Some people will say, I just did this work with this part. And I'm watching them grow. And they become like an adult. Sometimes people have said the part will just integrate into my heart and they almost never seem to find them again. So everybody's system shows up a little differently. And it's really, as Dr. Montessori said, how do you know what to do? Observe. And what Dick says, just ask what happens in their system. His name goes by Dick, Richard Schwartz. You know, so like, just ask, like, well, what's this part doing now? How's it showing up for you? So we trust the self of the client. So if you said, well, my part grows up, I would say, wonderful.
Okay.
My part stays the same. Wonderful. So it's really, the key is that they're not stuck in the painful moment and they're not carrying negative beliefs about themselves anymore, which means you don't carry those negative beliefs about yourself anymore.
Yes. What I love so much about this is in Unity, one of the teachings is like to release negative thoughts. But it's like, how do you do that? So this is what I love about this, because this is
a modality.
Because how do you release negative thoughts? Every time you tell people to release a negative thought, it's released and then, it's back again. Well, I released
it's
it.
Still
you
there.
Release it over and over again. It's like there is a method to this. And that's what I love about internal family systems. This is a method that allows you to transform those negative thoughts. It's not just something that your head is doing, going, release now. This actually works.
Right. Exactly. And I think we're seeing science now too, like memory reconciliation, where when we redo these moments, or maybe I step into the scene and I talk to the teacher who was being mean to me in first grade too, like we can actually do a little repair in the moment. Or that even encourage the child, if I stand and hold your hand, would you like to say something to this teacher? That it actually rebuilds the memory in the brain. And now the memory is changed. Like they're actually seeing science, and please don't ask me the details because I'm not a scientist, but I've seen presentations around it. Like they're really starting to think there's something that happens in the brain when we do this kind of work that actually it's like a new memory.
That's interesting. So that's the self going to the part, and if I'm getting this right, and saying, is there engaging? Do you want to engage with the dad, teacher, whatever it is that harmed you? What do you have to say? So you're facilitating that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And what you said earlier about like self being this like divine, or almost like you almost said like I don't know if I want to say your innocence or your essence, but it really is like these parts when they fracture off, a lot of times it is our essence. Because if you're a child who just is freely dancing or singing the alphabet or being exuberant, but dad grew up, he was always hit when he was exuberant. So his protectors say exuberance is bad. Then when the child does it, dad might say, or mom might say, you know, you better cut it out. And then the child has to essentially exile that exuberance and lock it away. And the protectors kind of push it away too. And so sometimes we find the parts that have been exiled that aren't burdened. They're just protected. Like I will be with a client and their innocence will be reclaimed. It's almost like this light that's hidden in a cave. And we bring it and bring it back to the heart. And it's like, now you feel more whole. I can play now. Because I had to exile that in order to be safe at home.
Wow, that's a really good explanation for why we parents, children, generational traumas keep getting repeated. You know, it's that protector that's trying to protect yourself and you're trying to protect your child from what you're trying to protect yourself from. That makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with, there's a part of me that's saying, wait a minute.
Of course.
Hold on. Because I have interviewed some people before who have actual dissociative identity disorder. And I would like for you to just distinguish this from that, because I've shared things like this with people about my own self and the own parts that I've found in my own self. And I've had people say, are you sure you're not schizophrenic? I'm like, no, it's completely different. But could you address that?
Yeah, and I could tell you like what I've learned, and I can't say it from a psychiatrist or psychologist, but I have what Dick Schwartz will say and what I've even noticed in people is these are extreme parts that are blending with us. So like if I have, people now call it alter, like an alter personality, like now I'm this person. Mm-hmm. Well, if you said something to me and I got angry with you and I was like being mad at you, it's like I'm a different person right there, right? But people who have DID, it's like almost like it's so blended, I can't even recognize that I'm blended by this other.
There's no observation.
Part.
Okay.
Right. So the parts, all of our parts are complex and have their own consciousness. So if I'm blended by an angry part, I have a story. I have feelings. I could be sad even as an angry part. It's not like just anger. It's like I'm a being who could be angry, sad, and I have memory. I'm mad because you've done this so many times to me. People have been doing this my whole life. And all of a sudden, when that separates, I don't feel that strongly about it anymore. So it's almost like we all have a form of that. And it's not schizophrenia. It's how the brain works, that we all have multiple perspectives. And for people who have that, it usually, from my understanding, have had so much trauma that they've had to break away and had to fracture that heart. And they had to have these extreme parts in order to survive and to be okay. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say it's really different. It's just a very extreme.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that, because I'm just thinking it might be on someone's mind. Let's turn our attention to the self a little bit, because I'd like for you to talk about the C's and the P's and how can you discern when you're not being self-led, as you speak about in your book.
Okay. Yeah. And I always have to pull out the C's and the P's, because even Richard Schwartz will forget.
I know there's curiosity and confidence.
Yes. So basically, so a lot of times the C's that we call on the most tend to be curiosity and compassion. Because like, say if I'm with you and you're talking to me and we're in any kind of even discussion, conflict, if I ask myself, am I curious? And it's not. And I've had to differentiate between, is my curious in my head or my heart? Because I'm curious could mean I want to figure you out so I can control the situation versus I'm curious from my heart where I really want to know you. And compassion is like this high form of like, I could experience this with you and I can feel the pain that you're experiencing. And I could reflect that back to you, how much I understand what you're feeling. which is different than empathy, which is like I'm experiencing it at the same time, and I might not even be as available to you as I am if I'm in compassion. Confidence, courage, clarity, where I really see things very clearly, connectedness between you and me, me and the higher spirit, me and the world, creativity and calmness. And the P's are presence, patience, perspective, persistence, playfulness. And for those, I really feel like, you know, like me having a presence here with you, with my parts, you know, I can see what's happening, perspective. I can see that I've just activated a part in you, or my parts are being activated. And persistence, meaning like I am a hope merchant. I am not giving up on my parts. I'm not giving up on your parts. Like I know you have good intentions, so I'm staying here with you. So when we decide, we kind of notice if we're self-led. Self-led means I'm here with my parts and I'm the spokesperson. It doesn't mean I don't have parts. It means I'm hearing them, I'm feeling them. Like I just had a part said, it's not that you're talking too much. I'm like, I think we're okay. I'll let you join in if you need to. But so, and there's little, I call them litmus tests. Like one, am I curious? Am I compassionate? Another on the reverse side is, do I have an agenda here? Am I really trying to have urgency and trying to convince you of something? That's typically not self. Because self is so comfortable in what you believe, I don't have to convince you of anything. Like if I have to like really convince you, it means I need you to think I'm right, which goes to, well, what if I'm not right? Oh, well, then I'm a bad person. I'm not valuable. So it all goes down if there's an agenda.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if I could just, if no agenda, I'm just like, I just want to share what I know and see what you think about it. And then there's that piece of noticing other people. How are you responding to me? And then am I more in my head or my heart? So if I'm more in my head, I tend to start noticing I'm blended by thinking parts, feeling very open and spacious, care more about me than I care about you. Whereas in my heart, I feel like it's more, I feel like open to both of us. Is that making sense?
Yeah, it does. So these are like quick ways to discern whether our parts are engaging out there, our parts mm-hmm. are taking over, right. Our self is clouded by the parts. So if I'm noticing in conversation with you or somebody else that I'm not really curious or I'm not compassionate, or I'm mm-hmm. I'm impatient, or I have an agenda. Mm-hmm. I do like the agenda. Mm-hmm. If I'm self-aware enough that I can notice those things, then that's like a little red flag that says, okay, there's some part in me or multiple parts that are clouding mm-hmm. myself. And it's an opportunity for me to notice that, to engage mm-hmm. with those parts, find out what's going on. And I think you say even ask them to kind of step aside to give some space right. so that the self can come mm-hmm. through. Now, to me, this is a skill that you're doing it as skill. You're talking to me. I can tell that you're skilled at this. And I think most people yes. would be going, wow, how would I have a conversation when I've got all these right. parts going on and I'm trying to talk to them at the same time? But I imagine that this is something that just becomes life.
Yeah. I compare it to learning an instrument or a sport. Like the first time you try playing a guitar, it's going to be painful. It's going to sound really bad. And if you try it, if you pick up your guitar for 5 minutes a day, after a few months, you're actually going to might play a simple song. And it's how am I noticing myself? It's you're actually creating new neural pathways of habit. Right? My habit is to not do it. But if I do things enough, it becomes a new way of being, a new way of thinking. And it just becomes a new normal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even if we can't really unblend, like say I notice I have an agenda or if I'm feeling angry, even if we can say to another person, I'm noticing that anger is taking me over right now. Isn't that different than saying, I'm so angry with you? Because now it's an mm-hmm. attack on the person. But if I can say, I'm feeling this
powerful.
Anger and it's boiling in me, is there a way we could stop and pause? Because I don't want this anger to take me over. And at a more advanced level, I could say, my angry part is telling me like what you're saying is really stirring up a lot in me. And it's hard for me to hear. And this part wants to protect me and yell at you. And I'm trying to hold it back. Is there any way we could stop this conversation? I could be with my parts for a minute. because I don't want to hurt you. Right?
I mean, that's a very high level of relationship.
Yes. Yeah. And I can tell you, as somebody who has, like, I have a lot of attachment wounds from, I wasn't really, like, I was raised, like I have all these infants that I'm telling you about, because even though I was raised in a home that had enough money and had everything we needed, there was no attachment. Like, there was no, my mom and dad didn't, like, tune into me and really give me the love and attention I really needed. And somehow, thank God for my parents, they realized there was this light inside that needed to be protected. And my brothers and sisters, you know, I think they got more wounded than me. And I feel like I survived because my parts were like, let's stay in our little space and let's isolate ourselves and keep this light alive. And so when people talk to me in a way that shows they don't like me or pull away from me, or my wife pulls away, I could feel, and especially before I got to know these parts and worked with them, I would have very big reactions. And now that we both use this language, she can stop and say, I have a part that's feeling very frustrated right now. And that's easier for my system to handle. And I can go, oh, I need to stop. And I'm like, oh, I have a part who's like lecturing. Okay. Why don't we pause? So it's almost a gift to your partner, to your coworkers, to your kids. We say speak for our parts. Like, I'm just telling you what's happening. It's, you know, this stuff is happening and I'm worried it's going to blend with me. And yeah, so it is a gift.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I just think it's a really high level of relationship. But if you and your partner or whoever you're in relationship with and also has those same tools, I could see how it could really, really be very beneficial. What if you're like at work and your boss is annoying you, mm-hmm. and he knows nothing about internal family systems. Right. And, you know, mm-hmm. perhaps if you brought that language forward, there's got to be a part that's saying that would be strange to bring that language forward. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be rejected. So what do you do? How do you have agency with this when the other person isn't part of this?
Right. Well, I will say, I would invite the listeners to try a little social experiment, because I did this when I first learned about IFS, that I was this guy in meetings who I would come up with an idea. And I think, I flattered myself at the time, like, I'm this smart guy, right? And I have some clarity and I share this idea. And a lot of times the bots would be like, yeah, I like that. And I would look around the room and everybody else was like, Mr. Shining over here. You know, like, I would turn people off. And then I learned about IFS and I was like, let me just try this. And I think people use a part of me. You'll see it. It's all over popular culture. People have been using that phrase forever. I've never seen somebody bad an eye who hasn't heard about IFS. Now, if I did, like, oh, I feel a part of me was really angry and it's sitting right here by my neck, and like, that might be too much. But if I say, like, so what I started to do in that scene was I go, you know, one part of me completely understands where we're going here. Like, it sees this and I validate every point that people are making. And I have another part of me that wonders, what would happen if we did it this way? And then what I notice is the group would say, oh, that's an interesting point. Let's talk about it. When I get blended by a part who's a know-it-all, I'm basically unconsciously saying to everybody else, I'm better than you. That means you're less than. And your ideas are meaningless. Listen to me. But if I say, let me validate how your ideas are making sense, and I have another part of me that's curious, you get more openness. Another thing you can do is say your boss comes in the room and they're just like tense and really reactionary. If you could like notice what's happening in your body, and the words I use, instead of give me space, a lot of people say, can you step back? Can you give me space? I say, can you give me just enough space so I'm here too? That's what I say to my part. So this scare, fear, I wish I remember the name of the guy on your podcast. He was talking about how when we're living in fear, we're not ourselves. All of our protectors have fear. Self doesn't have fear. So mm-hmm. if I feel afraid, I know that's a part. And if I say to this part, can you give me just enough space so I'm the one here with my boss? What I notice is you'll see the other person soften. because I'm creating a space of curiosity, compassion, and acceptance. Your boss's protectors are all riled up, and no one's fighting back. So even if I just do it internally, you'll see the other person soften. And this is especially true with parenting. So true that I think parents are like the ocean and children are a tiny little boat on the ocean. And our system is dysregulated and their boat's flying all over the place and they're yelling and screaming and throwing a fit. And you're demanding this little boat to right itself on this stormy waters. And when you calm your system down and you ask all your parts to give space and you can be open and compassionate, then the boat can just right itself and have smooth waters and the child can regulate themselves. And so just by doing it internally, even if you don't know your parts, you just breathe. Everybody inside, I do like a school announcement intercom. Everybody, hello, everyone. Can you please just give me a little space? Just let me be here too. I can almost feel like everybody is slipping back. And like all of a sudden something changes and the other person, they don't have to defend themselves anymore. We have nothing to defend. So yes, there's little things like that we can do.
Yeah, that's really helpful. I love the metaphor of the boat and the ocean. I didn't have this skill set or knowledge when I was raising my kids. I could see how it would be really helpful in parenting. Do you have some examples you can share, perhaps, of your own parenting, how this has been helpful to you?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, tons. And I'm still doing it. My daughter's actually home from Spain for a week, and it's taken me a few days for my parts to give me enough space that I can just be like present, because they were so concerned about time and how much time are you going to spend and how much. And because those parts were so activated, my daughter was in defense mode, like kind of wanting to push me away the whole time. I noticed almost like not comfortable, like not like slipping into dad's embrace like I really wanted. You know, like just even metaphorically, like, oh, when dad's here, I just feel so at ease. Like that's what I want. But because I was blended by these parts, I noticed she was more tense. And it wasn't until I even expressed to her what was happening for me inside that everything kind of smoothed out. But let me give you a better example. When my son was young, he's really active and he really likes big sounds and big noises. And even like almost, it's almost like he liked joking about like aggression is good. Like he wasn't really like, he never hurt people or anything, but it's almost like even one time in my book, I say like, he says, Dad, if I was in Star Wars, I'd be on the dark side. And it's almost like, I would be like, how, no, you have to be a Jedi. Come on. Like, come on. What do you think? You know?
And he gave birth to Darth
what I
Vader.
Know, right. Right. And what I noticed was, even though I had all these parenting skills and all the developmentally appropriate phrases to use as a good parent, they all had an agenda of saying, you're here and I'm going to help you become here. And we think as parents, that's our job, right? Help children move along to this other thing. But what's the underlying message there? That who you are in this moment isn't as lovable as what I hope you become. Which means, If you're getting the unconscious message or even through my words that who you are is not as lovable as you could be, that means I'm not lovable. I can't feel that. So my protectors come up and you get the eye rolling, you get the closing of the doors, you get the ignoring you, you get the yelling back because I have to protect my essence from you because you're essentially even micromanaging me, telling me, don't do it like that, do it like this. Don't do it like that, do it like this. But not so much that, more like that. It's all shaming.
Yeah.
And so what I realized was when I caught these parts and I asked them, like, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And they're basically saying, you're like known as a parenting guy. You're known as this expert. If your kids go out in the world acting like Darth Vader, they're going to think you're a piece of junk. Like you're thinking you're the worst parent on the possible. You're going to have a bad image. You failed. You're a failure. Life is over. Oh, no wonder why you're trying to micromanage him so much. That makes sense to me now. Okay. What if, and then I was in my own IFS therapy and even little things like telling like Seth, you know, there's We need the warriors and the soft people. Like, what if you're a soft people and your son's a warrior? We need both. I'm like, oh, curiosity. And I started to be like, teach me your ways. Teach me your ways. And all of a sudden, his protectors relaxed and I stopped the micro comments. I would just be quiet. Every time I want to do any correction, I'd be quiet. And I noticed his protectors relaxed. And he started to seek me out. And he started to ask me questions for guidance. And now after holding that for a couple of years, even now he's in college, he actually is like known as the sweetest, tenderest person in our family. Because his natural qualities were able to come. Now, I can't take all credit for that, but I think at least around my space, he couldn't show his most tender qualities because there was judgment. And he needed to protect himself. So, you know, as we kind of land in this place of self, our kids' natural beauty can just flourish.
That is such an interesting story. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I'll just say to finish, like, and then we can go to our parts, like I said earlier, and say, how did I do? Like, you wanted this all along. You wanted like social accepted behavior. You wanted some calmness. You wanted all these things so my nervous system could relax. And now you let me lead. How are we doing? And you're like, so good. Like,
we're a great team. Like,
keep going, Seth. Keep going, Seth.
That's a great, great story. And I really appreciate you telling me that because I think it does help for people to get the practical, pull it out of our head and really understand how this works. We're coming up close on an hour, but before I turn it over to you, I've got to tell you this idea that I had a long time ago. And since you're in the IFS world, maybe somebody you know can do this. Mm-hmm. I had this idea a long time ago, 20 years ago, of a play. Okay, so here's my idea for a play. I'm not a playwright. Mm-hmm. I'm not a writer. But person one and person two, it is the play, mm-hmm. and that they're mm-hmm. having whatever their interaction is, their arguments, whatever it is. But all around them are other characters. They're all parts. They each have their own parts, and the audience can see the person kind of beginning to engage with the other one, but kind of freezing, and then the little part comes out and engages with this part. I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but I think this would be a fabulous play.
Totally.
So that everybody could see how all of our little parts engage, and then maybe they go back and go to sleep, and then another one comes out, and the whole play is that. And perhaps there's more people that come in, but it could be just two people. I'd love to see somebody write this.
It would be so great. Yeah, that would be a great demonstration. Actually, these movies, what is it called? Inside Out, the cartoon?
I don't know.
They just came out with a two. It's basically a cartoon about...
Oh, I know. Like, where yes, there's disgust and...
So that's another way of portraying that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
sad right. and there's happy and there's joy or something.
Yeah.
The only thing that movie lacks is self. But it does show how like these parts take over the controls. And it is like that.
Yes.
Yeah. And that would be a great play, though. Like I could totally see that.
So anyway, I do want to allow you to share whatever that I might not have covered, or we might not have covered in this conversation in the last 5 minutes or so, whatever is important to you or what your message might be for people.
Okay. Well, one, I wrote self-led because to me, you're right, it is like a modality for people to be their most authentic self and so that we can be in relationship with other people in the most authentic way. And when I first found IFS, like this whole notion of, because really self is the primary caregiver. Like if I can be there for this little 3-year-old that I talked about, like before I hold him, he's often looking at you and like, you're the one, if you are sweet to me, then he's okay. And he's so reliant on you that when you have a bad day, he's hurting. But if I can get him to turn towards me, there's always this caregiver right here who could say, but I can hold you. And at first, when I heard that story, I thought it felt very lonely. That like, that means I can only rely on myself. And I want people to know that this is not a lonely model. It's almost like, yes, it's true. Like you have to love yourself before you can love others. This is like, really what that means is like, I have to be there for myself and be a whole being. Not like somebody is my missing piece. that if I'm a whole being and I can be with my parts and you could be a whole being and be with your parts, we can actually be together almost at the soul to soul level where we are authentically ourselves with each other. And I can hold you while you hold your parts, and you can hold me while I hold my parts. And if my happiness is reliant on your behavior, I'm always doomed to being in pain because you can't be perfect. So I just want people to know, like, this model is about being there for yourself, but it doesn't mean you have to be lonely, and it doesn't mean you have to be an isolated individual. So it is really about connection. That's why I called it living a connected life with yourself and others, that first it starts with you, and then you're available for authentic connections with other people.
Yeah, and I really want to reiterate that this is the spiritual path to me. A lot of people think that spirituality are these fantastical experiences that are, you know, supernatural or whatever, and crystals and I don't know, meditation. And not that those aren't spiritual, but to me, the spiritual path is very much about how we're walking on this planet, in this life, in this body, who we're being. And as we integrate ourselves and become more whole and allow that authentic divine self, that's what I call it, to emerge and blossom, then we're relating to each other in a really real way. And we're not just experiencing the divine, but we're expressing the divine, you know, that it's really coming through us fully. So that's why I think this work is so important. And it really is an integral part of the spiritual path.
I 100% agree. It sounds so aligned. And one thing, if I do have another second to say one last thing. I had an experience one time actually in prayer where there's a certain prayer where you can have a personal conversation with God and just kind of say what you want to say and whatever. And that's when I was writing this chapter on spirituality about, like, well, who's praying? Is there part of me praying? And I realized during this prayer, I would normally ask God, like, please take care of my health and my family and my children's health and their jobs. And please make sure we don't lose our home. And please make sure. And then I was like, wait, that's all fear. Fear of something bad happening. Let me just check. Oh my God, this is the part who's begging for something. And I asked this part, can you just give me enough space so I can be here too? And all of a sudden, dropped in, and it was very clear. I'm supposed to say, what do you want me to know? So I asked, what do you want me to know? And I heard, you don't need the acceptance of others, you have mine. And my whole system relaxed. And what I felt was like, I have myself, which now became a part. And God was like this larger self. And now as a human, I'm a part this larger self. So as God holds me in this acceptance, then I could be that same kind of like self-divineness for my parts. So wow, it's kind of like a nested. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it does so much to ask the question, who's praying? Because in unity, we actually teach what we call affirmative prayer rather than supplicating prayer. Not please God, help me, help me, help me, because that's really rooted in lack and fear. But I can see also how affirmative prayer can also be a part praying. You know, I am affirming that I am whole. I'm affirming that I am love. I'm affirming this. And it may be coming from that true self voice, but it also may be coming from a head voice or a protector voice.
Or fear. So or fear that question, manifesting in a different way.
Yeah, I think asking that question, who's praying, is really, really, really a key to being in prayer. So I'm going to give that
it's
consideration.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And that circles us back to Kavanah, that we're here from our heart. Like, we're in connection. We're not in our head asking, begging, affirming, even maybe. Like, if our head is affirming versus our heart. Like, our heart is, oh, I am love. I am connected. I am prosperous. Whatever the words I'm affirming. But here, it's like, I am okay. Right? Like, I am. You know, it's almost like I have to convince myself.
Right. If you're the convincing, then that's not your That's not the self. That's something else. Right.
Right.
And just to be always checking who's praying. I think that's really, I think it's great practice for everything, but in prayer, it's very helpful. Yeah. Because the self is going to pray differently than the parts. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah.
You can say that.
And I'll say this to the readers. You can have this phrase, who's here? So if you're upset, if you're feeling aggravated, if you're feeling unease, just by saying who's here is like a turning towards the inside. And we might notice in our body, like, where do you feel this pain? And just start at being curious, like, tell me what's happening. Who's here? Tell me what's happening. Just that alone. Because we always say, who's asking? And if it's from a soft place, it's now we've just invoked self.
Okay. I think we've given a lot of food for thought, a lot of ideas. Yes. And your book is self-led. I'll have the links and the show notes and to whatever else you want us to link to. This has been a really wonderful conversation. I've really enjoyed it, Seth. Mm.
You too. And I can't, like, the way you describe IFS, I'm like, are you trained? You seem to really get this. Seem to just, you're like a natural at this. Like, you really seem to understand it very deeply.
I'll tell a little story. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. I don't know. When did Richard Swartz found or discover IFS? Or when did he start writing? When was it written?
Gosh, it's been like 30, 40 years.
Okay. Yeah, I knew absolutely nothing about this, but I had a personal experience back in like 2003 or something like that, where I found parts of myself in me, not as sophisticated as IFS. But I did find a protector, and I did find an inner critic, and I did have a child that was crouched down on the ground. Anyway, I found four or five of my own parts, and so I thought, wow, this is a great thing. And I told people about it. I didn't write a book or anything, but I told people about it. And I've always kind of used it as my own practice. And then 20 years later, I'm like, oh, look, there's this thing called IFS. I think I've kind of been doing it. Not as deeply or not as clearly as what IFS is, but I've been familiar with it for a couple of decades because that's something that I had my own experience with it. Wow. So that's my own story.
No, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's so cool.
All right. Yeah. So anyway, I am going to close. I really appreciate everyone who's listening, and I'll have everything about Seth on the show notes. Thank you so much for being with me. And I now close the Spiritual Forum. Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, you can let me know by leaving a positive rating and review on your favorite podcast app, or make a tax-deductible donation at thespiritualforum.org. The Spiritual Forum is a podcast, prayer, and retreat ministry affiliated with Unity Worldwide Ministries. Thank you again for being a part of the Spiritual Forum community. And remember, you are an amazing, divine, and powerful being.